I came from an area where we didn't have a lot of money. Then I would go to my father and I'd be around people that had a ton of money. So I knew where I was and I knew where I wanted to be, you know? So I had to I pull myself up, and everything I have, I built, I did it myself. You know, the fact is that, you know, I grew up all hip hop. I didn't listen to heavy metal or rock music. I was listening to hip hop. I grew up with very big names in the industry that lived around the block, that these were friends of mine, you know, growing up, and I'm still friends with a couple of them. And when I was drumming, I was playing to a hip hop style. I learned how to play hip hop before I learned how to play rock. So being in a band is like being in a four-way, five-way marriage, okay? And everybody knows that sometimes regular marriages with one person doesn't work out. So when you've got all those personalities stewing together and traveling and trying to, you know, create music and create, you know, a following and so forth, and egos get involved, and, you know, when people are moving forward and other people aren't, or somebody's getting more attention, but they feel that they should be getting attention. You know, it was slow. It was like a Friday evening. They said, listen, we're shorthanded on photographers for this weekend, and Bill was going to do a story on a wrestling event in the wrestlers they're in, and they needed somebody to go take pictures. So I said, sure, I love wrestling, it's a lot of fun. So we went down, and
this is how it started.
This is how the wrestling, this is where Brimstone came from. You know, I went there, and then Brett, because they knew why I was there. They knew I was there to take pictures for the publication. Brett had known, you know, I took pictures of Brett earlier. He had overheard this. And he said to me, he goes,
how your story got started, as like we are in a school phase, you know, growing up phase, school phase as a kids, and then we start growing up with college days, and something strikes to us and we start, okay, this is my thing, and then we start figuring out, okay, and then you choose, okay, now this is me, this is how I'm going to be. So can you recall that particular phase at this moment, like how things happened with you in like growing up and childhood and all?
So it was a little I guess I was thrust into it at an early age. So I started my career in entertainment at 5 years old. My mother, my parents were divorced, and my mother, you know, thought that I could do some stuff. I know, you know, people always say, oh, your kid is cute and so forth, and they should be in this and they should do that. And I was a lot cuter when I was younger. So my mother had put me into acting, and she got me into a bunch of auditions, and I started my career as a child actor on Sesame Street and Romper Room, which are two old American programs. I think they might have Sesame Street out in India as well. You know, I know they translate into a bunch of different languages, so it is possible that you guys have I do believe you have Sesame Street there. But Sesame Street for me, I live in New York. I live on Long Island. Mm-hmm. I'm about 45 minutes on a good day, 3 hours on a bad day to New York City. So, you know, and into Queens. So, I think it's Kaufman Studios, I believe, is where they filmed it. And they still film it there. It's in, you know, it's in Queens, just outside of New York City. And, you know, we drove in and filmed Sesame Street when I was, you know, a little kid. And, you know, same thing with Romper Room. I remember more about Sesame Street than Romper Room. You know, I did a bunch of commercials, and auditioned for a lot more commercials, you know, but there's just so much you can remember at that age. But that was the first, taste of, entertainment for me. And, you know, then, being from, what was that?
As a kid, like growing up, that first clip.
It was a you know, a little bit of a nibble. And, the fact that it was on such an iconic show, like a Sesame Street and a Romper Room, it was, you know, it was a good start, I would say. And funny enough, not to fast forward, but years later, I reconnected with a couple of members of the cast that I had worked with, you know, obviously the people that had been a lot older than me. I was a kid at the time. And, you know, I got to reconnect with Carol Spinney, who was Big Bird, who I did scenes with, and Oscar the Grouch. You know, that was both Carol Spinney, as well as a couple other people that I had worked with on the show as a kid. And funny enough, Carol and I had done a bunch of conventions together. We did a couple of
speaking engagements together, which was great. You know, it was just a great opportunity for everything to kind of come full circle with that, which was beautiful. And you know, I'm very, very grateful that I had the opportunity and continued on my path, that I did have the chance to get back and meet with Carol again and his wife, and have the opportunity to kind of get to know him better as an adult, you know what I mean, outside of the, the, you know, of the television deal.
Just networking with good people.
So that was you know, as a kid, like I mentioned earlier, my parents were divorced, so my mother and my father couldn't necessarily always agree on you know, when was the right time to take me on to auditions, if they happened to be on weekends or days that my father was supposed to see me. And so rather than working together, they kind of butted heads, and it is what it is. And that was that. So that ended the entertainment thing at that point in time. I then fell in love as a kid with comic books. Huge lover of comic books.
Marvel, DC?
Marvel. I did have a lot of DC books. I'm not going to lie. Okay. I did have DC books, but I was never really into any DC characters the way I was into Marvel characters. Marvel characters are, you know, that much more well-evolved and so forth. But, you know, I always had the who's who for DC and all the books and Justice League and Batman and Superman, of course. You know. So, you know, I did always love them, but I always, you know, more so I love Spider-Man and the X-Men and, you know, different Marvel characters that were just, you know, the Hulk, iconic, Daredevil. So, that being said, you know, I wanted to be a comic book artist at first. That was my one of the first things I wanted to do. And I used to draw, and I was pretty decent for my age. You know, my my mother always wanted me to, you know, continue to pursue, you know, the art thing or something in entertainment. But, you know, it was like, you know, one of the things I really wanted to do. I spent a lot of time drawing. I still have a lot of pieces of my old, you know, art, a lot of the comic drawings, not to where it should have been or could have been per se if I continued, but it wasn't bad for, you know, being a kid. But then what happened is I went, when I was in elementary school, I wound up, I don't know how it is over by you, but here in the States, you usually start with, you know, first you start with the little recorder, the little flute. And then they put you into orchestra. So you're stuck playing like violin or something, which I played violin.
Primary things.
Exactly.
Basic things to start with.
Right. And then when I was a year in, they gave us the opportunity to join band if we wanted to. And I was introduced to the drums. And that's kind of what shaped a lot of my future in entertainment. Mm-hmm. Because again, going back to your original question of how this happened, you know, I fell head over heels in love with music. And I was a drummer for many years. I started in elementary school. I drummed all throughout middle school, high school. I went to private school for a few years. I was in my first bands there, you know, and then, you know, I went from, you know, into college, you know, for music. I studied music, and then I went touring, you know, as a musician right out of school. I didn't even finish my final year of college because I was out playing. So that started my career in entertainment.
Got it. So I kept on hearing lots of things about you, how you started, and you're a complete artist, you know, just not one thing at a time. You did lots of things, and that's why you're now still managing a lot of things. You were prepared for that. You know, it's not just like you just started doing when you became an adult. This was a schooling phase, you know, drumming, orchestra, then joining a band, then doing acting thing, being a part as an artist, taking part in every single thing. That is where the grooming happened for you. Your parents, I kept on hearing your parents played a major part when it came to auditioning and when it came to film and artists. But one thing I just want to ask you is, I kept on hearing like your mom and dad kind of combined in the initial phase to you to grow you as an artist. How the divorce played in part, you know, how were you like, how you handled that phase of your mom and dad getting separated? Because I think as a kid, I heard about the things I saw, like I listened to that particular part. I think you were kind of shattered. I don't know how you handled it. Can you tell me how was that phase for you, that particular divorce phase? You know, 1 year, 2 year, I don't know, but can you explain that?
It was very confusing, you know, because again, mm-hmm. as a kid, you always think, well, did I do something wrong? You know, what's going on? And, you know, and, but again, you know, you know, when they divorced, and they separated, mm-hmm. you know, it was just mm-hmm. very different for me. And, you know, my father wound up moving into a very, I guess you'd say more of a higher class area. Okay. You know, and my mother and I lived in a place called Uniondale, New York. Now, for mm-hmm. those of you who are not aware of you know, Uniondale,
yeah.
it's where the world famous Nassau Coliseum is, which is okay. one of the hubs of entertainment here in New York for many oh. years. It's where okay. every concert, every wrestling match, everything came through, you know,
all things related to art.
Exactly. And, you know, but in Uniondale, mm-hmm. you know, it was not as racially diverse as other areas. It was very okay. much, I was one of the only white kids in the entire town. There was a few of us,
oh.
like literally a handful. So, you know, for me, and not only was I one of the only white kids, but I was the only white Jewish kid. So,
Oh God.
Yeah. So,
that's really,
you know,
really like
very different, very interesting.
Yep.
So, you know, and I got
in New York
school. Yeah. In New York. So, you know, so Uniondale, you know, like I said, we were in a, you know, lower middle class area. And then my father mm-hmm. moved to a very affluent area and then mm-hmm. built from there. Because my father has always been a salesperson. He was also a musician for many years. Okay. He's a singer. He plays guitar. He was all self-taught. And he used to do all the stuff that I wound up doing. You know, like I kind of followed in his footsteps a lot. I also followed in my mother's footsteps a lot. So yeah. with them separated, I believe that I had the opportunity to kind of get that alone time with both. That would kind of shape the way I would become later on in life, especially okay. because, you know, in like just my personality in entertainment, in music.
Yeah.
You know, the fact is that, you know, I grew up all hip hop. I didn't yeah. listen to heavy metal or rock music. I was okay. listening to hip hop. I grew up with very
Street.
Big names in the industry that lived around the block, that these were friends of mine, yeah. you know, growing up, and I'm still wow. friends with a couple of them. What do you call it? I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Leaders of the New School. You've heard of Busta Rhymes. Busta Rhymes mm-hmm. came from Leaders of the New School. It was the group, hip hop group.
God.
And you wow. know, C. Brown around the corner from me. Him and his sisters, mm-hmm. and his two sisters were the original Black Doublemint Twins for okay. Doublemint Gum. And you know, Dinko lived down the road from me. Like, you know, and you know, a lot of very big names in hip hop were always around. From diagonal from me was my friend Shoba, whose cousin was in a big group called Houdini. You yeah. know, who did Freaks Come Out at Night. Anyway, so down the road this way was the cousin of LL Cool J. You know, so I got to know yeah. LL. You know, mm-hmm. and then I used to work in a it was called Friendly's. Friendly's was like an American Fair type of little okay. you know, family okay. restaurant. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was an ice cream place. And I used to work there when I was younger. And I met, and mm-hmm. everybody used to come through there from Public Enemy. I reconnected with Flava Flav a few years back, about 10 years at this point. Mm-hmm. you know, what do you call it? Salt and Pepper. LL was in there. You know, Busta and Leaders were in there. You know, so all these big, big name players in hip hop would yeah. always be there. And
they were around
that's
you.
Where, yeah, they were around me. So, you know, and when I was drumming, I mm-hmm. was playing to a hip hop style. I learned how to play hip-hop before I learned how to Good. Play rock. So now yeah. when so again my mom had me decided, you know, she wanted to put me into a private school. You mm-hmm. know, she heard that the middle school was a little rough. I'm like, I know everybody, and I was the kid that she didn't necessarily know, but I was out fighting in the streets, you know what I mean? I was
wow.
you know, throwing down with everybody. So it never was a problem. You know, I was perfectly fine going to the rougher school, but you know, it is what it is. So, you know, she wanted to put Got me it. In a private school, which again shaped me more, because now I went from being one of the yeah. only white Jewish kids to being mm-hmm. with all white Jewish kids, you know, because it was a private Jewish
school. Oh, God.
And God. Yeah. And that's where
but you I adapted. Started getting, you adapted.
Yeah, I adapted. And that's when I started getting into rock music and metal music and then combining God. The two to create my drumming mm-hmm. style, which is, you know, what I went on to, you know, play for many, many years before I got out yeah. of being in a five-way marriage and music mm-hmm. in bands okay. and got into, you know, pro wrestling. So
awesome. Awesome.
I hope that answers your question. I know it's long-winded, but I know you might cut this later. So.
No, I'll keep it completely. It's completely fine. It's your story. I want to discover you, your journey. It will help a lot of people when they listen to the full, it will help. So right. yeah. And I kept on hearing like drumming, band, than rock music, than being with the people, being on the street, adapting to the situations, you know, being a Jewish and like four or five, I guess, people, white and Jewish, then adapting to the situation, being the strongest person. And it happened with you with time, how you came into wrestling. I guess the whole thing is now about bands, music, and being an artist. How the wrestling thing happened?
So in music, unless you are a front person who is pretty much running a group or a band and so forth, and you can, you know, kind of, I guess, shift whoever you need to shift around if somebody's not working out, you're in kind of a marriage of four or five other people. Okay. So being in a band is like being in a four-way, five-way marriage. Okay. And everybody knows that sometimes regular marriages with one person doesn't work out. So when you've got all those personalities stewing together and traveling and trying to, you know, create music and create, you know, a following and so forth, and egos get involved. And, you know, when people are moving forward and other people aren't, or somebody's getting more attention, but they feel that they should be getting attention, you know, you know, tensions rise. Some people have, you know, I want to be able to continue moving forward, building, growing, because again, I came from an area where we didn't have a lot of money. Then I would go to my father and I'd be around people that had a ton of money. So I knew where I was and I knew where I wanted to be, you know? So I had to pull myself up, and I did it myself. And you know, so in music, when I was playing with a couple of guys that I met in college, and you know, we switched a couple different bands around, and they came from money, you know, they came from money. So they wanted to be what we call punk, you know, and you know, I'm not gonna sell out, I want to live in a van and blah blah blah. No, bro, you know, I don't want to do that. I want to continue growing.
You chose to be rich
I want to be, you know, something much bigger than that. And, you know, at the end of the day, I decided that, you know, it was just too much dealing with that many personalities. And I wanted to take a little bit of a break. And I only thought, to be honest with you, my friend, I thought it was only going to be a little bit of a break. It turned out that at that point, I had been working, because I did, you know, following my father's footsteps, I did sales, you know, and, you know, and that's probably why I do a lot. Again, that's why I'm able to negotiate. I run a bunch of businesses, to be honest, and negotiate
lots of businesses,
product deals, you know what I mean? Endorsements and so forth.
Yeah, licensing and deals.
Yeah. And I handle it myself, you know, where you know, other people have people doing it for them. I do all my business for myself. So being said, you know, it was time for me to kind of take a step back. And I was working at the time for, it was called the Long Island Voice, which, if anybody is familiar with the world famous, it is famous, you know, for in New York City, the Village Voice publication. Yeah. The Village, the Long Island Voice was the Village Voice's like little sister publication. The Stern Publishing at the time, and Andrea Stern, which is the daughter of the owner, wanted a plaything. She wanted a project. So she opened up, you know, the Long Island Voice with his blessings. And I was pretty high up in sales there. And but I was, like I said, you know, I was a jack of all trades. I did photography. I was in, you know, I was published. I did this. I did that. I sold. And they knew that, you know, I did all these things. They knew that I also loved wrestling. And one day, I'm just giving you the quick version. I know I talk forever.
Go on.
I forgot who it was exactly, but the, I guess the person who handled, you know, the assignments, had come over to me. It was slow. It was like a Friday evening. They said, listen, we're shorthanded on photographers, for this weekend. And, you know, Bill, who's one of the writers, Bill Jensen, who I also reconnected with later on in life.
Yeah.
And he's a huge player now. He does all murder mystery and, you know, stuff.
Wow.
Huge. Bill Jensen. You can look him up. And funny that the two of us went on to do other things. And Bill was going to do a story on a wrestling event and the wrestlers therein. And they needed somebody to go take pictures. So I said, sure, I love wrestling. It's a lot of fun. Why not? We used to, when I was a kid, I'd be, you know, in the Hebrew school, not the Hebrew school, in the private school that I went to, the Jewish school, everybody, they used to have all the pay-per-views. So we'd go, and then I'd be the one tossing people all over the place, you know, when we'd be pretend Royal Rumbles and, you know, you know, it was like, yeah, sure, definitely. I'll do that. So we went down, and
this is how it started.
this is how it started. This is how the wrestling, this is where Brimstone came from. I went there and I had met a bunch of people who would eventually essentially become friends of mine years later. Legends in the industry. One of them being the Iron Sheik, who just recently passed. I'm going to try not to cry because he was very, very, very essential in me becoming a professional wrestler and, giving me the opportunity to build my name, him and Brett the Hitman Hart. So what do you call it? When I'll never forget, I walked over and I was with Bill and the Bill was going this way. I was going that way. Mm-hmm. And what do you call it? As I'm walking towards the Sheik, he goes, "You look like you could be a wrestler, you know?" And I said, "Oh yeah." He goes, okay. "Yeah, I train you and blah blah blah." And you know, like he has such a thick accent. And I was just like, "Wow, okay." Obviously, in the business, we call that working somebody. And he was trying to work me to get me to spend money on him to train me. His agent at the time, Eric Snapshot Sims, who was with him for many years. Eric then took over and was trying to sell me on it. And And then Brett, because they knew why I was there. They knew I was there to take pictures for the publication. Brett had known, I took pictures of Brett earlier. He had overheard this. And he said to me, he goes, come over here. You know, he was on his way to leave. I think he was going to work at a WCW show. I think that he was already out of WWF at the time, now WWE. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, he goes, "Look, if you're really interested in getting in the industry, I heard the conversation you're having with them over there. But if you're really looking to get in the industry, here's my email address." It was AOL address. It tells you how long ago it was. He says, "Drop me an email. I'll see what I could do to help make sure that you're, in the right direction." Because he knew I was from the publication. It wasn't like I was some fanboy. So I said, "All right, I appreciate that." And I put the thing in my pocket. I took the pictures I had to do. And, and that was that. And I wound up, finding in a magazine, a wrestling magazine. It was a wrestling school that was opening up in Queens, New York, which then moved to Jamaica. So the Long Island Wrestling Federation, the Doghouse was the name of the school. Bobby Lombardi was the guy who was running it. And it was not too far from me. It was about an hour away, 45 minutes away. So I wanted to look into it, and I found Brett's email, and I sent him an email. I said, "Look, I found this place. I was considering going. This is who I was." He remembered, because it wasn't too long after that. And he told me like a couple of hints of what to look for, and sent me on my way. I went there. I did my first. My first kind of like spin around the place, deciding what to do. It was very like very, very dungeonish and, dark and dim and whatever and seedy and, all things that you'd expect from something that you're not familiar with. And I'll never forget it. I was like, "I think I'm home," and I wound up contacting I contacted Brett. And I said, "This is all the stuff." He goes, "Everything sounds legit. If you need anything else, let me know." And I went and I started training, and the rest is history. We moved out of that little seedy place and, moved into a much bigger place that went into what do you call it?
A better house.
Brooklyn. It was crazy. My car had been broken into like multiple times, while I was in there training. Same thing with my buddies who I was training with. And, it was just a crazy, crazy time. I got to know a lot of the boys, which, came in years later, became bigger players also. And, it was a really cool time. And I was one of the Doghouse originals, and that goes a long way, being who came out of there. So I'm proud to have come from there, and I'm proud that I went there. And that, again, is the beginning of Brimstone. We've been back and forth.
Brimstone.
Yeah, back and forth. Took about, like I said, 45 minutes to an hour, if not a little longer, traveling time to get in and out, from home to go to wrestle and to train. So while we were doing that, I'd sit there, and I started with like 500 different names, then trying to figure out, because again, I was from music, so I know branding and business. So branding,
marketing, and sales, everything.
You have to know exactly. You have to have something that's going to be brandable, memorable, marketable. Branding is everything. Yeah. I said, even though you're not supposed to come up with a gimmick, I was already going to be out of the game, and I knew what I wanted to do. So I was kind of trying to figure out what it was, and 500 names to 200 to 100, to 75 to 50 to 10. And Brimstone always was there, always made the cut. And I said, you know what? that's it. I literally, that was a big move because, you know, that was
changed
what was
your life completely.
Yeah. So yeah, that was, this that, is that's how thing. Brimstone was born.
Yep, yep. The story of Brimstone comes from here. You know, you were just a public, just a guy from publication. Someone saw you. Hey, you should be a wrestler. That kind of story happened, and someone trained you, worked on you. You trained. What was your body size that time? Was it like the same or like 1/4? How? What was your body size that time?
I was probably about half my size then, which is funny.
Okay.
I was about half my size then. I'm a big man. Yeah. What do you call it? So you know. You know, I wasn't small per se. Mm-hmm. You know, like my son now mm-hmm. at 22, you know, I was like around his size when I was that age also, which was, you know, it's nice and broad and so forth. Although he's over 6 feet, I'm not. So, but I'm, you know, when I wore my boots, I had 2-inch mm-hmm. lifts. So I was always 6'2", in the ring.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, so even though I'm 5'11 and a half, and there's a lot packed into that half, by the way. So, yeah, no, and it was wrestling. Wrestling was great, you know, but then it also took a huge toll on the body. But, you know, it gave me the opportunity to really build my brand and kind of be like, you know what, this is who I am. And I missed music. I still miss music. You know, I love music. And you know, when you're not doing something.
Yeah, go on.
When you're not doing something, you know, you it's just, you know, you use it or you lose it kind of a thing type, you know, I still know how to play. If I would have continued playing all these years, you know, it would have been, you know, I wouldn't have lost what I had, and I would have gotten a million times better. And I was good. Yeah. I was a good drummer, you know, and I miss it, but I went from beating the skins of drums to tossing people around and being physical. So I still had my physicality, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, as a kid, I beat people up, you know, and then I played drums,
different drums.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I don't get to beat people up anymore. It's upsetting. Oh. It's I'm just kidding.
You're
I'm
kind
nice
of beating
guy.
The records here. You're kind of breaking the records here. That's how you're drumming now.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Great. So drumming, music, entertainment, like acting, advertising, marketing, sales at this moment, handling your own brand, Brimstone, the story how you became a wrestler. What is the most fulfilling moment? Is it drumming? Is it wrestling? Is it like I heard your voice acting, saw lots of reel, or shooting a film or a movie? What's the best?
The thing that is most fulfilling to me is the fact that I have 3 beautiful children. I have my family. That's the most fulfilling thing for me. What do you call it? I do this not to be, you know, in the public eye or to be famous. It's a great addition to what I do, but I do this
is who you are, I guess.
This is who I am. This is what I do in order to support my family, you know, and to be able to give my children, you know, something to look up to, some, you know, and things to look forward to give them a little bit of something that I didn't have growing up. And for them to be proud of who their dad was, you know, and be able to continue to remember me long after I'm gone, the things that I've done and things accomplished to say, you know, dad was, you know, something else, you know? So, you know, to leave a legacy, that's one of the biggest things for me, leaving a legacy. You know, if God forbid anything happened at this point, you know, there are enough photos out there for them to sit and remember me by. There's enough, you know, music, there's, you know, videos, there's, you
lots
know, animations, you know what I mean? Toys, that there's so much to remember me by, that, you know, that's leaving and positive, you know what I mean? Things that's leaving a great legacy behind. And I'm still not done yet, but that's the most fulfilling thing to me, my family, my kids.
God, this is what you are, but for you, the most fulfilling, like being with your kids, being with your family, having dinner, spending time, whatever time you get at this moment. I guess you're traveling a lot, but whatever time you get up and you get to chat with your kids and all, you feel that's life for you. That's the real life. This is what you do for a living.
Absolutely.
Thank you for sharing that. And now we jump on your comic book series, Brimstone and the Border Hunts.
Mm-hmm.
That series has achieved significant success. Can you tell us about the creative process behind the series and how it has evolved over the years?
So the Brimstone of the Border Hound series, when it was time for me to kind of get out of wrestling, now I have no no disrespect to anybody who's still in the industry after a certain age. I still miss being in the ring, but I mm-hmm. didn't want to be in my elder years bumping around okay. in the ring and you know, ooh, having yeah. that be my right. sole source of income. So I mm-hmm. wanted to kind of transition my way out and do it with class. And I wanted to still continue to build on the Brimstone brand because, again, you know, it's a brand, you know, and that's yeah, my livelihood. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I thought to myself, I always loved comics. I always yeah. wanted to do something in comics. Yeah. So
it's like childhood love.
Yeah. Let me put together a comic book. Cause what are pro wrestlers? Pro wrestlers are comic book characters. You know what I mean? They're real life, you know, yeah. come to life,
smashing people's
you know, characters. So, yeah. you know, so we're superheroes. We get in the ring, we're larger than life, you know, you do yeah. your thing and so forth. So for me, yeah. You know, it was very important to kind of take my character out of the ring. And mm-hmm. then what do you call it? What I did was I took the wrestling out of it because again, mm-hmm. wrestling in a comic book is not as exciting per se as taking the character and acting as though, you know, you're, you know, I'm building a whole universe around it. And, so I took the wrestling out of it and,
Brimstone.
Yeah. Yeah. And Brimstone, you know, where in wrestling is, you know, the old school gimmick and he's the protector of Hell's Gates and blah, blah, blah. And,
wow.
which by the way, yeah. You may or may not laugh about this, but I don't believe in hell. Jews don't believe in hell. My whole gimmick, my whole shtick is a big, it's a joke. It was meant as a joke because Brimstone as being from hell and so forth. Everybody, oh my God, he's a devil worshiper. This, no, I'm Jewish. I'm a very proud Jew and Jews don't believe in hell. So what do you call it? That being said, it's very it's that it was a funny anyway. That was
yeah.
It was always meant
you made fun of it.
To make fun of myself, where people go, "You're so serious," and you know, people would always talk smack about me. It's like, you know, yeah, I am serious about my business. I'm serious about my brand, but I'm not taking myself that seriously because this is what the whole background is, and I'm joke. It's a big joke.
It's like so, entertaining people at the end of the day.
Exactly. So you know, my. So Brimstone, you know, we made it. When I wanted to go into the comics, I wasn't sure how to write the comics. So I contacted one of my good friends, Marcello Carnevale, who I'll always still give credit to. I said, you know, I'd like to take the character and transform him into a comic character. And what do you call it? We went to sit down and talk, which was probably be like an hour of a coffee, you know, to sit and discuss. It turned out being like 4 or 5 hours sitting there writing the entire Bible of what Brimstone and the Border Hounds would be.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we took the comic industry by storm. What do you call it? We were the first independently owned and operated comic in every single Barnes & Noble and B. Dalton in the country. We launched in Borders Books before Borders Books shut down. And that's when I went into Barnes & Noble and B. Dalton's.
Good.
I went ham. I went to town. And I built everything off of that. I wound up, I had, you know, all my, I had video
How
games,
many years?
I had toys, I had this, that, and the next thing. What was that?
How many years it took to actually publish
to get
the,
it going?
Comic? Yeah.
About a year.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole research
and
the story.
What took a year was to get the art team together. Because I didn't want hired guns. I wasn't going to pay people to sit and do the book. I wanted people that wanted to have a piece of the company because they're going to work harder, or you would think that they'd work harder.
That's a real big thing.
Yeah, I wanted to put together a group of people who were interested in not building just a comic, not just building, you know, making a couple of bucks, but who wanted to excel and be able to go further from here. I gave an opportunity. And I promised them, I said, I promise you that if we do this, not only are you going to have a piece of this, you're going to have a piece of everything that we have underneath it, as long as you stay with the company. I said, and on top of that, I promise you will get a ridiculous amount of publicity. I said, because this is what I do. I know what I'm doing. And
that's your life now.
I was a man of my word, and everybody got a lot more than what they even anticipated at the beginning. And, you know, like my lead artist, Sajjad Shah, at this point is doing Marvel and DC and Image and, you know, drawing for everybody and doing work. Like, he's doing amazing things. And, you know, like, I just, you know, bringing people to the dance has always been something I do. And I always bring people up with me, you know, even with Grindhouse Radio. And I know we haven't even gotten to that, but Grindhouse Radio, my partners were my interns. You know what I mean? You know, always want to elevate people, always elevate people. A good leader will always elevate and bring people with them. So, the Brimstone and the Border Hounds thing, it was a very big thing. And, I leveraged the Brimstone name, to get into a lot of the conventions to help push the comic book series. So rather than, go in and get paid to be there, I would go in and I would leverage for space for Hound Comics, which was my business. And then the bigger Hound got, the more people wanted then to pay me to come in and do, appearances for Hound and Brimstone and this and that. The list goes on.
Good. Tell me about you being a philanthropist. You support lots of NGOs. And what are the major causes that you put your voice for, that you support a lot, and that you are very passionate about, that this needs to be done?
In terms of philanthropy, I mean, I do a lot. I do a lot appearances and so forth for charity. Because I think I get that from my mother. It's very important to give back to people and to those who helped put you there, who helped put me in this position, for one, and two, the people that are less fortunate. I will always go above and beyond to try to help those people out, but who are more needy in terms of not being able to take care of themselves as animals. And I'm very, very, very close knit working with Sweetbriar, which is a nature preserve that is here where I live on Long Island in New York. I do a lot of work with them. My daughter actually is volunteering for them. My little one is volunteering for them. And I go there and I'll sit and I'll hang out for the day when they do events. I'll host other events for them and try to bring them, some stuff whenever I have the chance. But Sweetbriar Nature Preserve, that's one of the places that I hold near and dear. And that's the one charity that I have been spending a lot of time with, or more time with recently.
Good. So now we jump on your movies. You've done lots of movies. You've been popular shows, MTVs, and then in like popular mainstream movies. Any upcoming movie that you have or anything that's released, where can people find your movies? Please share about that.
So I'm in a lot of different things. Some I could talk about, some I can't talk about. What do you call it? Right now, I know I'm Director's Cut is currently on Amazon Prime. What do you call it? I have... oh my God. See, there's a lot of things. The problem is I have a lot of things that are filmed that I'm not allowed to talk about with NDAs. Let's just
anything
say you'll
close
be able
to your
to
heart. Any film close to your heart.
You'll be able to see me on a big show in its final season on Showtime within the next month, I believe, coming into September. I have a lot of different animations, a lot of different video games that you hear my voice in. Preacher 6. Is a movie that I'm really, really excited for it to finally launch. I'm told it's finally going to come out this year. It's been years in the making, this thing. COVID hit, and they had issues and so forth, but it's an independent film that I think is going to have a lot of legs. You know what I mean? I'm really excited about that. I did a bunch though. I've done a whole bunch of different things and, I just enjoy, kind of getting involved in doing it, whether it's a cameo or a role, It's just a lot of fun.
Just you enjoy the process. You are the process guy, any project, any small role, just make me part of it. And I'm happy just to be part. Everyone, just go and check out. I'm linking below the IMDb. You can find lots of projects that he did. There's a specific reel of his voice acting. The projects that he was involved in, one of the major is Naruto, and lots of projects. We can't name a single project at this moment. That's why I'm ensuring that you go and check out the IMDb profile where you can check out his movies. And I guess most of the movies will be coming on the OTT platforms. So like Amazon Prime, maybe the PIN code, something is different for US, for India, for other countries. So some of them may be available only in US and some of them are available globally. So that's it. You make sure you go and check out the IMDb and watch out his work. So and you can find out just by Googling his name, Brimstone, and the brand name. That's the brand name. You can just Google it and you'll find all the stuff. As
TheRealBrimstone.com is my official website. Also, just to add on to that, I know Seymour the Unfortunate Vampire, which is a really cool film. That's going to be out on Amazon Prime soon. Revelation, I do a little cameo in. And right now, anybody who's into food, if you're into barbecue, my, what do you call it? My son is on a show called Barbecue Country on the Country Network, which you can also find on Sling and Roku and all that jazz, YouTube for the older shows. And I'm on it as well. I do cameos on there and hang out with my son, which was an amazing opportunity. Yeah, and he won the first round. So what do you call it? We don't know where it's going from there, guys. All I know is it's all filmed, but I can't tell you what happens.
So that's what you were talking about last. I guess last week we talked about, we chatted on Instagram, and then you said that you were with your son. That's the show that we are talking about at this moment. I'm wishing all the best to him and to you and the whole support.
Thank you.
Keeping the all thing that he wins, praying for that. And now here's the last question. As a mentor for Score Mentors, you provide guidance and support to aspiring entrepreneurs. What motivated you to take on this role?
So I am on hold with Score right now because I'm just too busy to mentor anybody right now. Although I still mentor a couple of people from it. But when the Grindhouse Radio, which is one of my main businesses, and we do between 3.5-4 million listeners weekly worldwide, it's pop culture talk. And I also do the Dirty Little Secrets Club, which is another big show that's talk. It's just a little more risque. But we for Grindhouse, we were winning a winning a small business awards, the Score Small Business Awards, and Score is a, for people who aren't aware, Score is a company that, or I guess a resource for small businesses who need help getting themselves to the next level. They need advice. They need to know, you know, how to move from A to B to C all the way to Z. I was getting people that were emailing me from all around the country asking for help. And now this is everything from, you know, from art businesses to, you know, to musicians to, you know, to to axe throwing places, to liquor things, and all different businesses that were creative style businesses. And I helped them. I helped a lot of them. I went probably in the time that I was doing it actively, I probably helped about 300 and change different companies, all who were doing, you know, who are probably going to die. And I helped put them and have them become sustainable. And to this day, I have a bunch of them that still thank me, you know, at least once every couple months, you know, hey, Bram, I just want to let you know that if it weren't for you, I wouldn't be doing this and this and this. And that for me is truly satisfying. A lot of them told me, you know, look, the mentors we had before we got with you were just, I mean, it was abysmal. They told us we should just close down our business and do something different, because you can't have somebody who does taxes. You can't have an accountant, you know what I mean, tell a painting person how to run their painting business. You know what I mean?
Just basic things.
Yeah. It's just, it is what it is. So I wound up changing a lot of people's lives, and that was fulfilling to me.
Great to hear that from you. Here's the last minute that we have. Sure. In this last minute, any piece of advice for aspiring artists who admire you a lot, and for those who don't know you but want to hear from you, who's so much experienced and reached a level that they want to, this guy's really good, and I'd like to hear what he asked for me as an aspiring artist in this last minute.
So, you know, never give up, never surrender, always move forward, always, you know, be in here, not always in here. Because your head could tell you many things. Your head could tell you to give up. Your head could tell you to you know, just do something that is going to pay off in the end, rather than, you know, work hard, put your passion in, put all your beliefs in, and you will win at the end. You know what I mean? Your heart should always overpower your brain. Never give up, because a lot of people always give up right before they actually make, you know, hit that next level. A lot of people do, and they're literally, they don't realize it, but they're right on the cusp. You know, always put your best foot forward. You never know who else is paying attention. And if there's ever anybody out there that, you know, would like to follow me, you know, I'm at The Real Brimstone on Instagram. I spend most of my social media time on Instagram. And as long as you message me and it's respectful and I see it, because again, I get a lot of messages. If I see it, it's me responding to you. I will respond to you. Hopefully, and I will give you as much help as I can. But again, there's just so much I can do. Don't send me your Kickstarters. Don't send me your, you know, things like I don't do it. I'm not reposting them. But you know, if you have a serious question, or you know, you need help, you know, with something, you know, I'm always welcome to receiving those messages, as long as you're supporting me and paying attention to what I do as well. You know what I mean? I greatly appreciate that, you know.
Thank you so much, Brim. Thank you for being on the show. Firstly, to everyone who's listening at this moment, this guy who's sitting in front of me is not the guy who we can cover in 1 hour. He has lots of things to say, and he has done a lot of work. He does it by himself. It's not easy to cover this in 50 minutes or 45, 50, 60 minutes. I hope that we can get him in a few months to do another part of this. But at this moment, it's very hard to cover all those things that he does, like his podcast, his license, his comics, and all lots of stuff. But at this moment, I am just thank you for being kind. Thank you for being on the show. And thank you for making your time available. Thank you for mailing me at the last moment. Hey, I'm in the traffic, because I was leaving the office. I was 10 minutes away from the office, and then I saw the mail. So this was really, really urgent thing that happened. Just want to say that this is something that I can't cover in 60 minutes, the whole story of Brimstone. But I think that we covered much major part of how Brimstone happened and how he started. For him, family comes first. That's the one thing that matters to him a lot. You can see his brand value and all the stuff, but that for him, that's what he does for a living. And he only wants family to be with him, and that's Brimstone for you. Thank you. Thank you so much, Brim. Thank you for your time.
Honor and a privilege. Thank you so much for having me, and hope to see you again real soon.